Hello, you have a prepaid call from...
Keith Jesperson.
Bruce Davis.
Patton Clark. Robert Farno.
Black Horse, you're my friend.
Welcome to another edition of The Lighter Side of Serial Killers. I am your host, Keith Revere. Today, we're going to be talking to James DeVeggio. Him and his then-girlfriend, Michelle, I believe you pronounce her name, went on a little spree, so to speak. Some murders happened in the back of their van. Some torture, murder, and a lot of sexual abuse from family members to, you know, from strangers. They went out, as he called, he went out hunting. He's come a long way. I've known him probably a couple years now. And we talked on the phone a few times, and obviously with the podcast. We're going to try to do a video podcast soon, and we'll see how that goes. It's video prison podcast, prison video chats are hit or miss. There's a couple of companies that offer Securus, JPEG, and GTL. Very iffy. You know, the screen freezes half of the time, and they took their effort to set an appointment up and do a video chat, and sometimes it doesn't work out. Sometimes it does. You know, quality is so bad. So this one, we're just going to do a phone call for this. I hope you guys don't mind. I'll try to put a picture of James up as we're talking. Yeah, it's hard for a lot of people to listen to my show because you are hearing some people who've done some horrible things, some torture and abuse, and some even cannibalism, you know, that we're going to be talking to. But what I want people to understand is this is called the lighter side of serial killers. We do try to focus on positive change in their lives. And not everybody. Certain, you know, get the happy face killer. He doesn't really show too much remorse. I mean, somebody who's psychopathic can't really show remorse. They don't have remorse. They don't have empathy. Some people revel in it. But there's a lot of people who are psychopathic. And there's a lot of people like James. It was more of a drug-filled, crazy experience with his, you know, then-ex or now-ex, then-girlfriend Michelle. Who kind of orchestrated a lot of the things, a little mind manipulation. And certainly he's a very willing participant. But once somebody comes sober, they're like a new person, not excusing anything that they've done, but also showing the power of drugs, like hard, hard drugs in people's lives. I had Bruce Davis from the Manson family on. I've been friends with Tex Watson, who's doesn't want to do it. He doesn't do podcast. But same thing, such drug-induced mindsets. You get the right person, like a Charlie Manson, kind of steering you. At a young age, when you're on these mind-altering drugs, you can turn into somebody you never thought you would be. And similar to James, the power of drugs and what drugs can do to you and what drugs can make you do. Again, you're not blaming drugs for it. You have your own free will, of course. But that's – we're hearing from James out of his own mouth of why he think what went wrong and what changed his life around in prison. We'll be hearing directly from him in a second. But I just want to thank you for tuning in. And without further ado, let's hear from James.
Hey, Keith.
Hey, there he is.
Man, you're a hard person to get a hold of.
Obviously, home. It's always just bad timing when you either try to call. How you doing?
Right. Yeah, you know, I'm tired. This place is definitely different.
Yeah, well, I got to tell me about it. How was the transfer? Everything goes smooth, as smooth as can be, I guess?
Well, the transfer was kind of sucked because they took the long way about getting here. Went from San Quentin to Sacramento, from Sacramento to Mule Creek. Spent the night in Mule Creek. That was a 10-hour bus ride.
Wow.
It should only have been a 3-hour ride at most a year. I don't know. In the end, it's... I guess it's all worth it.
Yeah.
still trying to figure that one out.
Yeah. You seem to have what was the difference? Like, what was it like your daily routine at San Quentin on death row there and then to where it now? How's your daily routine different?
Right. Well, you figure up there in North Sag, you got out of your cell every day from 7:30 to 1:30, right?
Mm-hmm.
At which time you could do pretty much whatever you want, play cards, basketball, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
and you lived in a cell by yourself. Here, these are double cells. At the moment, I don't have a cellie. I did have one, but he had to go. He was a slob.
would you tell me he had to go? Did you kick him out?
Yeah, you got to go. You got to go. Let's find a new adobe.
I'm curious, but I didn't really hear. I heard people mentioning where people have to go before. What's that process like? Did you actually just tell him, like, no, you got to go? Or is that kind of like, you kind of work things out? You didn't have a choice, really.
No. No. I said, you know what? We just can't live together. You know what I mean? I don't live like this. I have a bottom bunk chrono, right? Mm-hmm. So whenever somebody moves, it's normally the guy that don't have the bottom bunk grano. And we parted on social ways, I guess. You know, it wasn't that big of a deal. Just he had to go.
Yeah.
These cells are definitely bigger, a lot bigger than the San Quentin cells. This prison's only 13 years old.
Oh, okay.
San Quentin, built in 1850.
Sure.
And so... here, the door opens at 7:45 every morning. You can go out on the tier. If the big yard's open, you go to yard, go to group. Because all death row inmates are closed custody for 5 years, which means you have to be back in the cell at 11 o'clock or 11:30 count.
Gotcha.
And you have to be back in the cell at 8 o'clock at night.
Mm-hmm.
And we lock up at 4, from 4 to 6:30. That's dinner count. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot more free time out of the cell, for sure.
Good.
And that's good, and yet not so good sometimes, because after 22 years of being on death row, you kind of get used to a program of shutdown at 1:30 in the afternoon. Now you've got to shut down at 8 o'clock at night. Tends to wear on you a little bit, right?
Yeah. How was it like? If the people there, you didn't know anybody when you got there, did you? Did you have any people that you knew of, or you kind of make friends all over? Not friends, so to speak, but acquaintances, I guess you can say.
Yeah. Unfortunately, this is a level 2 prison. It's what they call a 50-50 yard. Some people are still active gang members, some aren't.
Mm-hmm.
The building I'm in Delta is an EOP unit. EOP stands for Enhanced Outpatients. It's a mental health ward, kind of.
Okay.
It's funny because I got into it in October of last year in San Quentin because I wanted to keep my heart programs. And when I got here, I found out it's like one flew over the cuckoo's nest. it's kind of funny. For the most part, it's still not all that bad. Not people I really make friends with. I prefer to stick around the people that I knew from the row.
Mm-hmm. Has a lot of people been transferred there that you know, or just a couple?
No, I know quite a few of them, but they're not here where I am. They're over in what's called the PWC. Not sure what that stands for. I think it's like permanent workers something.
Okay.
Yeah, I know about 15 of them that are over there.
Oh, good.
I think there's supposed to be a total of 140 death row inmates coming here, but I'm not positive of that either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know a lot.
I get to see those guys every once in a while when we go out to the big yard, but that's the only time I see them.
Yeah, I know a few that went to Mule Creek, Pelican Bay, a couple over there, too. I know there's a couple more medical facilities, I think, too, that people were transferred to. So it's going pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah, back up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Slowly but surely. I mean, I don't know how they did the order. Like, I know, like, Eric Houston, you know, him I know, that was transferred a few. I think, and some are coming pretty soon. Like, David Carpenter, I know the old guy. He's been transferred to. And some a little slower. I think Wayne Adam Ford, he's about to go.
Uh-huh.
And some are more. I mean, what are you? Like, some, like, Wayne Adam Ford was, I mean, he struggled with, you know, a lot of anxiety. Yeah, out of most of his life, he was really nervous about going. And the people that end up being transferred, they're loving it. You're like, oh, I didn't realize it was going to be this good, you know, this much freedom. How are you? Was that transition for you, like, as far as mentally, like, was something you were looking forward to, didn't want to go, or just kind of like, oh, I'll see what happens when it happens?
Well, I look forward to it for a couple reasons. One, my sister lives real close to here.
Oh, good, good.
Anna lives two hours down the freeway, which is a lot cheaper than coming to San Quentin.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I was looking forward to coming here, probably as much as anybody else, a little anxiety and what's going to happen, how's it going to go, you know, because it's like going from one school to another. All of a sudden, you got to start all over.
Yeah.
So you'd be kind of crazy if you didn't have some anxiety in it.
Yeah.
You know, but I think most of the people were more worried or scared of the situation. But the fact that we got to go to level twos made a big difference, right?
Mm-hmm. That was like the mentality, so, like the people there are a little different, obviously, from kind of like a different level of crime, I'm assuming, from San Quentin's Row to a level two, where you probably have a lot of guys who are going to get out in a couple of years and different mentality there.
Right, right. You got some people who probably here that should have been on a roll, in my opinion.
Okay.
But they worked their way down. They've been locked up for 30 years, whatever, worked their way down to finally not getting in trouble.
Yeah.
And you're right. You got a lot of them that are going home, a lot of them that talk about their parole hearings and you know, whether they ever get paroled, I don't know. But, yeah, so that's a difference.
Yeah.
They're shocked to find out that we're still condemned inmates.
Yeah.
You know, they all just assumed that the death penalty was thrown out the window, which it was not.
Yeah.
So that's different for sure.
Mm-hmm. As your voice got a little muffly there. I mean, did you do something with the different way?
I know what happened is I covered the microphone up with my hand.
Oh, okay.
I had to do that every once in a while.
That's okay.
Yeah, not on purpose, but.
Now, do you see, like, when you got there, like, maybe the people there were a little bit more nervous? I mean, I'm assuming they knew, you know, people from San Quentin were going to come there. I would figure they might be a little more nervous, right, to where, okay, here come the heavy hitters. You know, we're getting people from San Quentin, you know, a little more intimidating, I'm assuming, on the other way. Not so much for you guys.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. When I first got here, I had to stay over in a place called Ohu, which is medical. I was only over there because there was no bed over here in this unit.
Mm-hmm.
Four different guys came asked me if I was active, meaning playing that gangbanging shit, which I don't do.
Sure.
So it tells you that, yeah, when they heard that we were from death row, there definitely was some nervousness going on around other people.
Mm-hmm.
But most of that seems to mellow out because they're finding out that the crazy people from death row aren't coming to level twos. You know, the people that are violent still.
Mm-hmm.
They would be going to level threes, level fours.
Gotcha. That makes sense. Did you find was it smooth for you as far as that goes, like kind of blending right in with everybody? I asked you a couple questions, and then from there it was kind of fine?
Right. Pretty much. I'm not trying to make friends with these people. Because for starters, I don't trust people in general,
mm-hmm,
in prison. Who knows? Maybe after being here for a few years, when you first...
This call and your telephone number will be monitored and recorded.
When you first...
Mm-hmm.
That takes time.
Mm-hmm.
It takes time. And kind of the same thing here. And I've never really been big on making friends like that anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have some people I consider pretty good friends from my death row days.
Mm-hmm.
And as a matter of fact, I don't know if Houston told you, but I saw him the day he and I went to committee. We talked for a while.
Oh, good, good. Yeah, yeah. He didn't get any details, but he said you guys talked. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. I got to. The first time we talked in years. I hadn't even seen him in years.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. How long did you... I'm going to say, you said you knew Eric. How long did you know him for? You know, like, the whole time in Quentin, or is that somebody...
I knew him the whole time I was on the yard over there. I was on that yard for 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So once I moved to Norsig, I was up there for 15, so I hadn't seen him in all that time.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sorry. Cut out a little bit. Oh, now I can hear it. You said, I'm sorry, right. Say that again. You said about Eric. So, you said, how long did you know Eric for?
Oh, like I said, we were on yard two together for the 7 years that I was over there, right?
Okay.
And then I moved to Northlake for 15.
Okay.
So, I mean, I still knew him. I just never saw him after that.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, I've known him for years. I mean, he seems like a great guy. I try to help him out as much as I can over the years. And he was excited to go. Like, a lot of people were. Some people were nervous. But he was happy as hell. He was the first person that I know got transferred. And he loves it. He's loving every second of it. And I don't know if you know, but in arts, he's an amazing artist, too. I know you said, you know, you're involved in a little bit, too.
Oh, really?
And he does, like, almost like cartoon art, like the old Far Side cartoons. But extremely amazing, like an amazing, a great sense of humor. I think I have a binder, like a 5-inch thick binder filled with artwork that he sent me over the years.
Oh, really?
Of just like the most creative cartoon art, usually something to do with what we've been talking about, you know, just joking around. But he's amazing at that style.
Right.
He said, you do art. What kind of artwork do you like to do?
You know, I haven't done no artwork now for quite some time.
Oh, okay.
I don't even know if I ever will again.
Mm-hmm.
I used to like to just draw on typing paper because, to be honest with somebody, I didn't have to make a long letter.
Yeah.
You know, use up half of the quarter of the page.
Yeah.
But like I said, I lost most all of my art supplies when I got here. I applied now for a new hobby card, but I just don't know if I'm going to get back into it.
Yeah.
There, I did it because it was passing the time away.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my art always just depended on what I felt, what I was, you know.
Yeah.
I got to the point where I preferred a color.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Than actually draw things, you know, like, but it has to be really intricate, small, detailed stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you, I did a page that had little ladybugs all over it. Right? And so that was the kind of stuff that I got into really, really enjoying doing, more so than drawing.
Ah, nice.
Because I only learned how to draw so I could color. Let me tell you a little bit about this place here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've looked it up or not, but nothing in this place says prison whatsoever.
Oh, God, I was going to ask you about that.
None of the signs say it.
Mm-hmm.
There's probably, God, there must be 50 gun towers, but there's not one guard in the gun towers.
Wow.
I haven't seen a gun since I got here.
Mm.
It has an electric fence around it,
mm-hmm.
lethal electric fence.
Wow!
So they don't really need guards with guns here.
Mm-hmm.
The guards they ride bicycles when an alarm goes off. Yeah, they jump on bicycles and go there too. Which, in some ways, makes it a pretty dangerous prison because if somebody was trying to seriously hurt you. You ain't got nobody to come save your butt.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
But it's huge. It's like a college campus here.
Wow.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. It's so big.
Mm-hmm.
And the water's bad here. It's got Legionnaire's disease in it. Mm-hmm. So they give us bottled water, gallon bottles. They must go through thousands of these bottles of water every day in this place.
Wow. And it's amazing the scenery. I mean, one of my biggest platforms that I talk about while I have people on the podcast and everything else, and even my last book that I wrote, was the Norway prison system. I don't remember if we talked about it or not, where it's like this reward-based, positive reward-based system. And like their recidivism rate, like the chances of someone going to reoffend within a couple of years when they get out, is like the lowest in the world. And some of the American places, American facilities, North Dakota, California, and Oregon are implementing a tiny bit. They're having drastic changes. Because the scenery in the prison is great. It's not like doom and gloom everywhere. It's, you know, it's brightened up. Like I said, like a campus kind of a feel. They got sofas and artwork and things like that. And they're treating people with respect and dignity. Yeah, they've done crimes and stuff. But it's not like punish, 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 punish. That's not going to help anybody make things worse. It's going to piss everybody off.
Right.
Shake down this, shake down that, this day, shake down that day. When you have more freedom and a reward, but hey, okay, you no write-ups for X amount of time. You're going to get more phone calls. And there's a great show on Netflix that just came out. I think it's called Unlocked, to where they called a sheriff, you know, came in and said, no more lockdown. It was 23-hour-a-day lockdown. They opened the cells 24 hours, took the guards out of that one specific unit, and that's it, except for count twice a day. And for food, for the meals, the guards stayed out. It was like an experiment. And there's some hit or miss. It was kind of divided between the old people and the young people, you know, who's going to have a little power trip, who's going to make things right. And of course, they took advantage of things, you know, once or twice where the sheriff had to come in. Hey, I can shut this down. You know, it was smoking outside, bringing the drugs in and things. And but slowly but surely, they got more privileges. Hey, free phone calls. You know, and some place like San Quentin, you know, they have free phone calls. And but these little tiny things started making a big difference. And that's like my biggest platform is just be nice. And I mean, in your experience, did you see that at San Quentin at all, where the punishment style versus maybe at this new facility where it's a little bit more kindness? Do you think one does better, the people that you've known over the years, like the threat of fear or showing kindness? In your mind, what do you think is better for, you know, rehabilitation or making somebody's life a little bit more easier there?
You know, since Governor Newsom has taken over, you know, a lot has changed like that. That's what he's trying to turn San Quentin into. And there's definite kindness works. Here's the bad thing is, okay, there are some people who are on death row, God forgive me, that shouldn't be breathing on this planet. Mm-hmm. You can't let them out, believe me, because nobody's safe.
Yeah.
And the problem with when you get too much kindness is you get the one that'll do something bad, and it ruins it for the rest of the people who are trying not to be. When I came to this prison here, every nurse I met and every CO I met said they wished they had 100 inmates like me, because I'm respectful. I'm thankful every day that I'm here, where I could be closer to my family. And so the kindness works on both sides of that field.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it makes people better people. Unfortunately, there are some humans. And I know in Europe and stuff like that they have, but then again, they've had those prisons for a long time. I don't really know how it's going to work here.
Yeah,
I hope it works.
Yeah, it can't hurt to try. I mean, the problem is with the public perception is, you know, what do you mean you're going to show these people kindness? You know, because I can understand if you're, you know, a victim or someone's from a victim's family, it's understandable. But what they don't understand, like I get a lot of heat. Because I've been getting a lot of notice, been a lot of TV shows and news stations, and people, their first thing is, wait, you talk to us, you're a killer, you talk to this person, that person. I'm like, yeah, but I'm showing you what works. You know, they're coming on for a positive, what's called the lighter side of serial killers. We're talking about positive change in people's lives. And once they know, it's also helping potential future victims of, hey, if this works at this facility or this works in general, let's implement this. But you got politicians listening to the people saying, no, we want to punish. Well, the politicians have influence over the prisons, and it's a hard change. And, you know, people think, oh, it's going to cost money to have more count or people or guards who are skilled in communication, not so much, you know, how to shake somebody down. You know, well, it costs money to teach them. Well, it costs money to keep people at your facility. You know, it'd be better if somebody got released and they stay released. That's saving money instead of like $50,000 to $70,000, you know, per person there. But hopefully, you know, change happens. You know, you never know. How about for you? Go ahead.
I used to swear up and down the only way I'd ever leave San Quentin was in a pine box.
Yeah.
Nobody sees what happens in the future. And I'll tell you this, Keith, the reason why I've never talked to anybody.
This call and your telephone number will be monitored and recorded.
Even when those people wrote them books, I wouldn't talk to them for a lot of reasons. But one, because like I told you before, nothing I did makes me happy in my life as far as what put me in prison. And to cause any more pain to the victims or their family is just never something I'd want to see.
Yeah.
And it's because of who I am today. You know, I've been drug-free for 27 years. I couldn't say that.
From
the day
amazing.
I got arrested.
Yeah.
But then, and it's not that it's not rampant. It's worse here, believe you me.
Yeah.
But it's not something I want in my life. I want what I have in my life, good people, good friends, and my family. You know,
yeah.
I wish that, you know, things things, all that wishing could be different. It can't be different. There's no change in life, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But maybe someday, like you said, if things change, maybe there's a victim that don't become a victim. Who knows?
Yeah, for sure.
If they don't start trying to treat people instead of just throwing them in a cell for and letting them out at some point.
Yeah.
It's never going to stop, you know.
Yeah. And it has to be the person wants to change, too. I mean, what was it for you? Because I think back, you know, with your case, I was like 97. I think the trial was around 2003, 2002, somewhere around there. What was that transformation like once you got to jail, then sentenced, went to prison? When did it start kicking in, like, what the hell did I do? And I need to change. You know, how was that transition and what helped you change?
Hard to say it because I was doing so much dope. But at one point in the beginning, probably around, I don't know, February of 98, after being in for about 2 months, and I thought to myself, and I have no training. I thought to myself, what the hell did I do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I saw my mom and my uncle, and, I really couldn't believe it. And so...
Yeah.
At that time, remember I told you I started studying about the Lord. There was a pamphlet in my cell called "Doing Time with Jesus," and I didn't have anything else to do, so I answered the questions and I borrowed a stamp and I mailed it in, and I got—I don't think I got 100, but I got like 98% or something, and it amazed me that I actually got it.
Yeah.
And so I think from that point on, I knew that I could never make up for the things I'd done, mm-hmm. but I had to be a better person. And it took me a long time. It's not something that happened overnight, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's letters out there from some crazy girl that wrote to me, and she wrote sex letters to me and mm-hmm. to get me to respond. And I responded, and what she do? She sells the letters.
That's big, yeah.
But it doesn't show what she wrote. It just shows what I wrote.
Of course.
But that was years ago. That was years ago. I don't respond to letters like that any longer. I give all credit to God. I know people say all inmates turn to God, and that's okay. That's okay. Mm-hmm. I try to tell them, you know what the Bible brings me? Peace.
Yeah.
Whether there's anything there or not, it don't matter. It brings peace, and you know, I only wish that the people I hurt in life could find peace. Some have. I talked to some of them.
You did? Oh, I didn't know that. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know a lot of things I do because I don't share it with them.
Sure.
So some things in life have to stay private nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of hard in this world. But
especially.
I think.
Yeah.
What's that?
No, go ahead. Keep going.
I was going to say, I think I learned it. Basically, almost right away when the drugs were out of my system. And then, as I'm sure you probably know, my mother passed away during my trial.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to keep the tears out of my eyes because every day I think about her.
Yeah.
And I remember telling her that I was going to try to do whatever's right in my life. And I do every day.
That's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. I haven't had a write-up in 27 years.
Oh,
I don't break rules.
Yeah.
I try not to lie. I probably do, but I try not to.
Yeah.
and that's the 63-year-old me, not the 37-year-old me, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Were there parts when you initially found that, you know, that pamphlet, the Christian pamphlet, and you started reading the Bible? What was it that really caught your attention first? Was it just the aspect, oh my gosh, somebody like me, things I did can be forgiven? Or was it something about the person of Jesus or a story that you remember was kind of initially caught your attention to that?
Of course I do. It was none of that. None of the above. It was the fact that I got 98%. I got 98%. I don't know. I've never been a moron, but.
Yeah.
I was amazed. I was amazed that I could do that. And I could remember what I studied, and I wanted to do the next one, and the next one, and the next one, and the next one. You know, I mean, I knew I knew about Jesus from the time I was 10 years old. Wasn't a very good follower.
Yeah.
And I always say this, a man named Chuck Gilson was the first minister I knew when I was 10. I still remember him asking me if I wanted to accept God. I got to write a letter to him. It's been years now. And I told him, you know, it's funny, just like the Bible says, he planted the seed. Unfortunately, it took it 27 years to start growing.
Yeah. But it did.
Yeah, so that's what it was. It was the 98%. And I wanted to get 100 on the next one. And since then, I've done hundreds of studies.
This call and your telephone number will be monitored and recorded.
It's funny. That's kind of how I got started with all this, like 25, 30 years ago, something like that. Now is a group called the Saints Prison Ministry. That is one of the first times I went to church. I was following after a girl, you know, saying, "Hey, I go to church." And I believe I grew up, you know, not in a church, but, you know, a Catholic church, not really believing anything, at least not anything of substance. And so I followed her. And one of the first times I went to visit her church, this group was there, Saints Prison Ministry. They went into the prisons and played sports with these guys. Like a legit game of basketball or softball. And at the end, they, you know, gospel presentation. So I'm like, oh, wow, they get to go to the prisons. I wasn't, but they have a pen pal program. And that's what I did. I sent the test out, you know, Bible tests and helped them with the reading and writing, obviously Bible stuff. And eventually turned into me going into the local prisons here. And then, you know, so on and so forth. It just turned out to what it is now. But that's a big thing.
You have 60 seconds remaining.
Of that outreach kind of thing. And it's so many stories of that's how it started. You know, from a Bible test, back and forth. It's very common, and it's great. It's great to hear that.
It's been a while since I sit here and talked to somebody for so long.
Ah, that's good. It's amazing that even like a guy, I'm sure you heard of David Berkowitz, the old Son of Sam guy.
Oh, of course.
I've been friends with him for probably like a decade now, all through faith, you know, faith-based things. And when he heard that I used to be part of the Saints Prison Ministry, oh, he went nuts. He used to help out with them. Like, they changed, I guess, organization of leaders a few times, and we just did a project together with the new leader over there, like kind of a Q&A, you know, what parts of, you know, that ministry was, you know, helps, what part doesn't, you know, volunteer stuff. It's amazing. I mean, I wish more people – I mean, it's hard enough for people like in the local churches to even go to like a nursing home to help people out, you know, sing a song, let alone go into prisons. You know, it's so hard to even get people to go out to the streets or nursing them, let alone to that. So it's hard. It's hard to find people to even pen pal. You know, it's like, oh, this person did this, this person did that. It's a letter, you know, or a phone call. You know, you're not going to, you know, nothing's going to, you don't want to get bad juju from this. You know, you're being there to help and, you know, just to make friends. You know, that's all it is. Just be friendly with somebody, build relationships up. And do you still get a lot of letters? Obviously, the true crime market's so massive right now. Like I said, selling letters, selling clothing, selling hair, selling everything. Do you still get a lot of requests, you know, like for letters and artwork and things like that?
It's been a long time. You know, whenever somebody writes me, no matter who it is, it could be hate mail. If they give me a return address, I've always written everybody back. I just feel that if they can take the time to write, of course, I only got one piece of hate mail in 27 years.
Oh, that's good.
But no, I don't generally get much anymore. And the people that are in my life today, one has been in my life ever since I got locked up, Hilda, they're all Catholic Christians. So outside people, you know, and I'm really honest when I write somebody. I tell them straight up, if you're trying to make
this call and your telephone number will be monitored and recorded.
I tell them, just be honest. You know, you want me to sign a letter? I'll sign it.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with stuff like that. Somebody trying to make money.
Sure.
But I'm not going to, like I said, I don't write letters like those people usually try to get me to write.
Yeah.
But no, I can't remember when the last time I got a letter from somebody. You know, you used to always get them asking you for your handprint.
Yeah, there's a lot of that out there. There's a lot of hand tracings,
That's
pretty. I mean, even you can't turn on the TV without a true crime show, and I love it. I mean, I love all of it as long as it's, you know, positive based. I mean, and everybody and the mother has a podcast, but unfortunately, it's all negative. You know, it's all showing the negative side of, hey, let's talk about the murders, let's talk about the crimes, you know? And all they're doing is like reading like online Wikipedia pages. You know, how about you get to know the person? You know, maybe they're nothing like they were, which 9 times out of 10 they're not. You're not even the same person because a lot of things happened decades ago. I'm not the same person I was 5 years ago, let alone 30 years ago. you know, and then right. Now there's some. I mean, there's some who revel, you know, in what they've done, and you know that's who they are, and they'll never, like you said, some people shouldn't be let out because they're right. gonna say, I'm gonna keep doing what I was doing, but that's also right. a small majority of it. You know, a lot of it, like very I said, small. You've even admitted in from here and over the years that it was drug issues. You know, you start doing some heavy drugs and your mind's, you're going to go crazy, you know, absolutely crazy. Now, have you talked to Michelle? I mean, since you guys just split, you know, company once the arrest happened, or do you keep in touch? You know what happened to her or how she's doing?
I ain't got nothing to say to her.
Is that bad?
I never wanted to admit that I let Michelle manipulate me the way she did.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was too macho all my life to let anybody think that a female could control me as she did.
Mm-hmm.
And she knew what she was doing all along. A lot of people don't know about when she testified against me in our federal case, mm-hmm. because that's all kept sealed. It couldn't be used against her.
Yeah,
by then we weren't on drugs no more, and, so all these statements she gave to the FBI about how she was going to set everybody up, and you know, but I mean, I don't blame her. Don't get me wrong. That's not what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Because I could have always said no to everything, but I didn't.
Because sure.
She knew my weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
She was very manipulative for sure. So
yeah.
No, I don't wish her any ill. I have nothing to say to her.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't ever think about her other than you should have brought her up.
Yeah. Did she ever try to write you at all or just nothing at all?
One time, I'll tell you a little story because sometimes I can be pretty vindictive. She had wrote an article in the Human Rights Magazine,
mm-hmm.
and I saw it. So I had sent a little message into the Human Rights that she used to go by the nickname Mickey. I said, "Hi, Mickey. Just wanted to let you know I was thinking of you." And she liked to call me Daddy. So I wrote, "Love, Daddy." She never wrote an article to see it after that. that was a long time ago. I mean, we're
sure.
talking probably about 17 years ago or something.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like I said, we both lost our minds
mm-hmm.
during that time. But sometimes I hate to think it. I think if Michelle had the plan all along,
mm-hmm.
you know, all she ever talked about was wanting to kill somebody.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, like I said, I don't think of her, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes that's a good thing. No doubt about it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's good. I'm just glad to hear like you're in a good place now. You know, so you know, positive, and you get a change of environment, which you know it's hopefully is good. You know, it seems like everybody has been
right.
enjoying the getting off of the road into their places. And do these guys offer any like classes or programs? Anything you seem interested in aside from like art or something like that, or anything else that like anything musically or they got I don't know anything
well,
aside
we
to that.
Yeah, I have what they call groups here, but it's kind of funny. They're mental health groups, but they're not like you see on the TV. One, for instance, I get credit for going to the yard for an hour and walking around.
Okay.
Another one is you go in and you listen to the music. They'll play, you know, songs for you, whoever wants to ask for a song.
Mm-hmm.
The one yesterday, matter of fact, was on chronic diseases, so we talked about, you know, heart disease and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
What's another one? They have, they got one that's called spin class. They got all these bicycles in there. You go on, I haven't got that one yet, but.
Yeah, I know what they are, yeah.
Yeah, they got a movie class. They call them groups, mental health groups.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't got into the art one here yet. I've been trying to.
Mm-hmm.
But I got to wait till they sign me up for it, I guess.
Yeah. I never know. Maybe I'll get back into it. I mean, are you going to be allowed, like, supplies? Obviously, your supplies you're going to bring or, like, throughout, whatever. Do you know if you're allowed to have them or order them in? And
oh, yeah.
I know Eric is wanting them too, because Eric was great at, like, I was allowed, I think I sent him, I think through like Walken Horts or something, one of the quarterly packages you guys used to get. I think got some colored pencils, and he was great. Colored markers. So you guys can have order stuff in, or they have stuff there for you?
Yeah, no, you can order it like that or from Dick Blick. But you got to get a hobby card for this place. That's what I'm waiting to apply for. They wouldn't take a hobby card from San Diego.
Gotcha.
And therefore, while they took my paints and my glue and my tape, I still got a lot of my colored pencils, though.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Maybe get the urge again. Hey, whatever makes the time go by quicker, you know?
Pretty much.
Do you have a – are they offering, like, jobs, or are you interested in working at all there? Or
I am, very much so. I just got cleared the other day for all jobs. So now my counselor will have to put me on a list. I've really been pushing that issue. The only thing I can't do, I can't work outside the gate because – obvious. You can't work outside the gate. It's called no gate pass. The problem with jobs is they passed a law a while back that anybody who works in the prison gets paid. So most jobs pay 8 cents an hour.
I knew it was around there, yeah.
Not a whole lot of money, but
yeah.
I just like staying busy. So, you know, for me, you know, I want to get an ADA worker job for the American Disability Act.
Oh, well, okay.
They call them gold coats. Gold coats, yeah. And you push people around in wheelchairs and stuff like that.
Oh,
yeah,
that's good.
What you want to do.
Yeah, obviously you're not going to get rich doing there. I mean, you get something, but again, just to make the time go faster and keep your mind sharp and aware. And I think it'd be great.
Right.
No doubt about it. I think a few people are looking forward to that. Only those who are able, anyway. And I mean, I said there's still some. I still talk to a few. Did you know Joseph Danks over there in San Quentin?
Who?
Joseph Danks? Yeah.
Yeah, I knew Joe. Yeah.
Yeah, I talk to him every week too, and he's still not really sure, you know, about the move. He's still a little freaked out. He's a little unsure about everything. Hopefully it goes good. And
the last time I saw him, it looked like they had him on good medication for a change. The first time I met him was crazier than a loon.
Yeah.
He was way out there.
He definitely has. I mean, he even admits, I mean, some of the things he still hears and sees, you know, partly schizophrenic, a little bit of that. I mean, obviously, you know, too, if you know him. But deep down, he's a good guy. I mean, we have great conversations. Every once in a while, it takes a left turn somewhere to see something that's not there, kind of a thing. But he's still a little nervous about stuff. Another good guy. Did you know Martin Kipp, the big guy, the big Indian?
I'm not sure. Name doesn't sound familiar.
Yeah, every big tall guy's almost 7 foot tall. He was popular because he used to be like a roommate with Richard Ramirez, a celly with him, and he's a pretty popular guy. But again, a really good artist. He just started doing a lot of artwork. He's excited about going over there. I don't think the guy from his transferred list yet. I'm not sure it's the order of everything, because I know people who, as long as they haven't gotten written up, I'm not sure if those like yourself who hasn't gotten written up in like decades, you know, they're first or what the order was, but slowly but surely, I mean, getting them all out of there. And is it true that they're turning that into like a rehabilitation unit now with the row was, or I guess still is for now?
Yep.
Or what the plan is for that?
His plan is to turn that prison just like a European prison, basically into an inmate college.
Oh, okay. All right, good.
Yeah, whether it happens or not, but that's what Newsom's trying to do.
Now, did you meet him? Because I know I was actually talking to Bruce Davis. Well, I was talking to him on the phone. And when Newsom was there, he's like, I got to go. Newsom's here. I was like, okay.
Oh, yeah.
And he even got to talk to him for like, I don't know, like 30 seconds or a minute or something like that. Do you ever get to when he visited or no?
No.
Okay. But it seems to be, I mean, there's pluses and minuses about, you know, people have a lot of positive things and a lot of negative things to say about him as a person and who he is. But what he's doing in the prison, especially San Quentin, maybe all of California too, especially San Quentin, it seems all positive. Like, it seems like it's all good. Right. Like, at least the motivation behind it is good. Now, whether it's going to work or not, it's proven to work elsewhere. Now right. It's now Norway. You know, the crime in Norway is probably a little different in California. It's a whole, you know, right. There's still violent crime over there, but California, you know, it's one of the worst in the country with gangs and everything else, and it's. Right. You know, throughout history, it's, well, if it's going, I mean, this is like the testing ground where, like, they've done it in North Dakota. So North Dakota has the lowest recidivism rate in America, but it's also North Dakota. You know, it's not exactly high gang activity and, you know, violent murders, you know, serial killers coming out of North Dakota. Exactly. You don't see that documentary. You know, it's not like the serial killer trading cards of North Dakota, you know, that true crime stuff out there. I'm curious. I mean, I'm excited anyway, you know, to see what's going to happen there. And,
yeah.
Obviously, a lot of people have benefited from it. You know, I mean, getting, again, that death row is not gone. Kind of put like a hold on it, I guess you can say, a moratorium. But it's good. Yeah, it's, you know, it's, I think it's so far, it's all positive for sure.
Yeah.
And
I agree.
No doubt about it. So what else is going on? You said you're pretty much, are you all settled in there? You said you don't, right, you currently don't have a roommate right now. Did he giving you another one, or you think you're going to be a single cell for a while?
I would definitely prefer to live by myself. Matter of fact, I asked the CO how you go about getting single status. They said, well, the only way I know is you either kill your cellie or rape your cellie. I said, well, them two options are not on the table.
Yeah.
Not easy to get single cell status.
Is it overcrowded in there or not too bad?
No, not really. I mean, I guess some of the units are, not this one. Matter of fact, the other two death row inmates in this unit, neither one have a cellie at the moment. But then there's ones in the unit next to me, they have cellies. The ones that are in a PWC, some of them do. There's some black death row inmates that are trying to fight it. But they've been told you either take a cellie or you're going to get shipped to Chino.
Oh, wow.
Because we all were understanding that we were going to get like a year single cell status, but they didn't say that was guaranteed. It's just what they recommended. Then when we got here, Warden Jones said that I'm only giving you guys 30 days. I'm not going to treat you any different than any other inmates. So, you know, but you know, I've been here over two months, right? I got here February 29th.
And, now, how's the warden? He seemed like a good guy, as far as wardens go.
Her, it's a she.
Oh, with her, okay.
Yeah,
her, okay.
Yeah. I think it's Gina Jones.
Gotcha.
I saw her, man. She's just a little waif of a woman. You know, maybe she can't be much more than about 5'2". It didn't look like real thin.
No, oh, wow.
I didn't talk to her because there were a bunch of people whining about everything, and it. You're not used to. You got in a big yard. She's just standing there all by herself. No guards around.
Oh, wow.
You know, talking to these guys tells you what kind of prison it is.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, I didn't talk to her because, you know. But.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like a big difference between the two facilities. I guess that's all level two, you know, how that works in most places, I guess.
I don't know how much of it you actually even heard, but I was saying when I first got here and I had to go to PMU to get my property, they said you go down this way and you make a right. So anyway, I stepped out of the building and I just stood there and I was looking up at the sky. And it's the first time that I've been outside a building, not handcuffed, but without an officer standing there with me in 27 years.
Wow.
So it was a little it was good and scary at the same time. And as I walked down there, I didn't walk very fast because it just was so unusual. It still is to me in a way when I'm around COs or nurses or doctors with no cuffs on, you know.
Wow.
I don't believe I ever needed to have the cuffs on death row anyway. Because I'm not a threat or a danger to any of those people. That's just the way it was, right? So, yes, I have a... Exactly. I have a window here in my cell that when I sit at my little desk there, I can look down and watch the sun come up in the morning. First time I've been able to see that in all those years, too.
Well, I can imagine.
Pouring rainstorm yesterday. Watched it raining all day. It's definitely, it's the little things in life that that you didn't see sitting there in San Quentin all those years.
Wow. Yeah, yeah, mentioned so, it. Go ahead.
What's that? No, what was that?
I was going to say, when you had mentioned when you were outside for the first time without any cuffs on or anything else, different from San Quentin, you said also, as great as it was, you also said it was also felt a little scary. What was a little scary about it? What was that kind of a feeling that you had? What made it a little scary?
It's hard to explain. It was like, I don't know, that I just didn't feel that I should be able to be outside.
Wow.
I guess it's like being a caged animal. You get used to having somebody lead you around, I guess.
It's like institutionalized.
I didn't know where to go.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know where to go. I was lost. I had to ask two people to make sure I was going the right way. you know, I'd have to do that no more, actually, after a couple months. But it was really strange to be that old and not feel like you could just walk down the walkway by yourself.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's a real thing. Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
Yeah, so I'd say that it was just because you're so used to not being able to do it, I guess, right?
Yeah, well, as I said, I mean, the term institutionalized is a real thing. I mean, the worst, I mean, that's actually a good thing for you because it was turning to the positive, but I wrote about it in one of my books that some of the prisons, when you get thrown in a hole or in solitary, you'll be there for sometimes a year. And then from solitary, you get released. Well, the suicide rate is like 70% of people who spend a year or two in the hole and then get released directly from there out into the free world. They have no idea, especially who's been there for decades. You know, they come out and they just lose their mind. It's too much. You know, you just can't do that. And you just went from saying how, I'll say drastic might be a strong word, but such an emotional thing from just being not cuffed on the yard. Now from decades and multiple years in the hole, set to freedom. That's the most drastic thing ever. And they can't, a lot of people can't handle it. You know, it's a drastic change from that. It's people don't understand how big of a thing it is.
Yeah, and I'll never be cuffed in this place unless I get in trouble. You know, then you get cuffed. But if I'm not in trouble, I walk all over the whole prison with no handcuffs on.
Wow.
Go to visiting, no handcuffs on.
Do you have more visitation time there, like for family and friends to come actually visit, or is that?
Oh yeah. In San Quentin, you only got a 2.5-hour visit.
Okay.
If the people came from 250 miles away, you could get five in that little cage. Here, let's take Fridays, for instance. Fridays are walk-in visiting. You don't have to call and make an appointment. You can come at 4 o'clock and stay all the way till 7 o'clock if you want.
Get out. Wow.
Yeah, you can visit for 7 hours.
It's amazing.
And the visiting room, they have a big screen TV in there, right? They got vending machines. You can buy food, soda. I was out there a couple weeks ago. It's wild. You could visit all day like that. And
wow,
then on the weekends, I think it's like 7:30 to 2 on Saturdays and Sundays.
Wow. Definitely a huge bonus and blessing. I know some, like in Norway and some of the European systems, they're even taking it to another level where, you know, if you're very well behaved, so to speak, that you can have weekend visits, like conjugal visits for like a weekend that you can spend with your loved one. Like, I don't know if it's all part of the same property, but basically, all right, there's a little hotel room for you guys for the weekend. Yep. So they're taking it to another level, which is good. You know, it's still a good thing. Again, it's reward based. You get more and more, you know, you get to cook your own food. You got your own kitchens, you know, a group kitchen, but you can cook your own stuff. So it's, you know, so I don't know how far American prison is going to go that far, but it's,
they have conjugal visits here.
Mm-hmm.
We don't get them. We don't get them for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But they call it.
This call and your telephone number will be monitored and recorded.
Yeah, they call it the
San Quentin had trailers.
Ah, okay. That I didn't know.
Yeah, but that, again, that was for mainline people, right?
Gotcha. Is that something that would ever be offered to your section or level two, or no. Is that just not a level two thing?
Well, no, it's because we're still condemned.
Gotcha. All right.
That's why we can't have it because we're still condemned.
Gotcha. I didn't know that part of it. But at least you got the visitation. I mean, that's definitely a big blessing for you for sure. Now, how many friends? You said some friends and family there. How many people do you have to visit you or come visit you still talk to?
Well, I have 30 people on my visitor list. Not all 30 of them come to visit by no means.
Okay.
But, since I've been here, I've had 2 visits.
Oh, good.
I have another one scheduled probably in another couple weeks.
Oh, that's good.
Eventually, there will be more people. But, you know, as people get older, they don't quite see them as much as I'd like to.
Yeah.
My daughter has to fill out the visiting form. They live in Nevada. Hopefully they'll be here.
Nice.
It's so much more convenient to visit here. You know,
sure, I can imagine.
No cage. You don't have to see me in handcuffs.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely good. That's it. It's all so far. I think it's all positive. You know, the change. No one that I talked to said, you know, it sucked. Everybody seems to be pretty happy. You know, for sure. So that's definitely a good thing. No doubt about it.
Right.
And I was going for the podcast thing that I did. I have the I always like to ask kind of like the same question to where. The James from, you know, the 1990s to now, like if someone was in your shoes back then, you know, like even if you could say something to that person, like, listen, I was exactly where you are and you're about to go down the road that I went down to, you know, whether drug induced or whatever emotional, mental state you were, what would you say to that person? Like, hey, listen, I've been there, done that. But what would you say to that person to say, listen to me for a minute. You know, what would you say? If you go back and say, give wisdom to yourself, you know, like before Michelle, or maybe the time around that time that she was coming into your life, what would you say to young James? Like, listen, you know, let's not go down this road. What kind of encouraging words would you say to yourself or anybody else who might be maybe heading down that same road?
It's a funny thing because for me, it would be long before Michelle or long before Elizabeth. Back when I was still married to my third wife. My mother had said when I married her that you finally met a woman. And I went out one night. I didn't go out to do anything wrong or anything. And I met a girl, and one thing led to another, and we spent the night together. And life went downhill from that point again with... started doing the drugs, and so if I had to go back and tell myself, I should have been like my stepfather, Roy was, God rest his soul. I didn't think he was much of a man, the way he let my mother talk to him, but he was a good man. He came home every night, he paid the bills, raised 3 kids that weren't his. I would tell myself to not think the way I thought, to be like him. Because that's what men do, not what I did.
Yeah, yeah.
What I did. So yeah, I think, you know, I mean, it's really hard because we don't want to listen at that age. I'm not even sure I would listen to myself at that age.
That's true.
You know. And the drug thing. How do you stop people from taking the drug? I don't know. Yeah. I'm glad I don't do it. I wish I'd never done it, but.
Sure.
There's a whole lot of people that do the drugs even here, and you can tell them till you're blue in the face. One day life's going to pass you by.
Yeah.
You're going to sit and you're going to look back, and you can't make it up. No. Can't make it up.
Have there been any Bible verses that really stuck with you, or any passages that kind of gave you some strength over the years since you got kind of back on track with that? Anything specific or just in general?
Yeah, I don't think there's any particular passage. that sticks to me per se. I know a lot of people, especially in prison, quote passages constantly. I've never been to one because I always remember the one, and I don't know the actual passage. That says even Satan can quote scripture.
Oh, because it's in the book of James.
People want to tend to think that's why you do it, and I like to keep my faith in God more to me. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, if someone wants to talk, there's a guy here, Green, that we do discuss religion together.
Good.
But most of the people, again, use God as their crutch.
He's
my peacemaker. Mm-hmm. So, the Catholics say, and God said, my peace I give you, and how true it is.
Yeah.
You know? So I guess if there's anything in the Bible that I would tell somebody to really hold on to, it's the peace.
Yeah.
You know, no matter what you've done in life, man may not forgive you. You know, that's mm-hmm. for sure.
Yeah.
And not real forgiving. But,
That's a good verse. I mean, the rest of that verse, the first of the second verse you mentioned, you know, peace that I give you might be not the peace that the world gives you, the peace that I give you.
Uh-uh.
And it's a whole different thing.
Right.
You know, the peace that can rest in the shalom of God, the Hebrew word shalom, that true peace, you know, that passes all understanding, as they say. And I said, even the passage you quoted, you know, from James, you know, is for people who just think, yeah, just because I believe it's good enough. He's like, no. You believe that there's God, and you believe God is one? Good. So does Satan. But at least he trembles at the name of the Lord. You know, so believing is one thing, and having, like, salvation faith is a whole different thing. You know, experiencing that peace. You know, because that's a lot of people miss. You can memorize all the Bible verses you want, but if you don't have that peace, that assurance of salvation, then, you know, it's all for nothing. You can talk a good game, because I've been involved in prison outreach my entire life. And even the first book that I wrote was examining people's faith, you know, and, you know, some famous people like Berkowitz and Tex Watson and Bruce Davis, and everybody proclaims to be a Christian. But really, you know, they just quoting, you know, scriptures and something. Like I said, putting a show on for a parole board is one thing, and actually having that peace in your heart's a whole different story. You know, whether you're, you know, a Catholic, whether you're a Protestant, it's the same thing. But it's good. No, it's very encouraging, you know, for certainly that, you know, you said that 100%. It's crazy from the facility, well, you're a little better facility now, but the, you know, prison itself, you know, all things considered, it seems like you're in a good spot, you know, emotionally and physically and mentally. You know, it seems like the good Lord's been keeping you strong and healthy. So that's a good thing. How do you feel otherwise, you know, health wise and body aches and pains that way? Because we're all getting older.
It just comes with the age, you know. I mean, I'm a diabetic, and I just found out the other day that I have a really bad cataract in my left eye. All this time, I thought, man, what the hell? It looks like I'm looking through a cloud. That's what it is. I didn't know that's what a cataract is.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So eventually they're going to have to schedule surgery to remove it. Other than that, I mean, I'm in fairly good health, I think.
Good.
It takes a little while to recover when I try to work out, but...
yeah, no, I know all about it, trust me. That's for sure.
Yeah.
No doubt. Good. Well, it's good to hear. Definitely. It's definitely encouraging talking to you. As I guess we've been talking off and on for a year or two now, off and on. Yeah, but it's always good to talk to you on the phone for sure. It's always encouraging. No doubt about it.
You have 60 seconds remaining.
Well,
good
later,
timing. What's that?
Later we'll try to get a video call in. It's so hard to set the times in, right?
Yeah. Yeah, ideally for me, almost always Tuesdays and Sundays, I'm off all both days. I try not to schedule anything for those 2 days. And I figure some, even at nighttime, I'm almost always at home around 8:30 at night. So I'll have to do something for that, too. Well, it's good talking to you.
All right, well,
definitely.
It's good talking to you, too, Keith. I know it's
definitely.
Late there, so you better be good.
Yeah, for sure.
We'll talk again real soon.
Well, there you have it. Conversation with James DeVeggio. We're going to try to do a video chat. Just the timing didn't quite work out. If you heard at the end of the podcast, we're going to, you know, keep trying. It's always hit or miss, especially with the quality of the video. You never know. With the Wi-Fi, sometimes, you know, the screen is frozen. It's just a pain in the butt a lot of times. But we're going to work on that. So I thank you for tuning in. We got a lot more to come, a lot more guests lined up. And until next time, see ya.